Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Season 6, Episode 148. Let's start another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Coller, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Coller from TLC Creative Services based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin right now.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Okay, guys, we haven't gotten together, just the three of us. Last episode was fantastic. We need a chance to just talk. So we got to talk, like, what's happening?
It has been a while. It seems like it's been a few episodes at the very least.
I'm glad we're all back together. It's like going home.
Okay, yeah. Sandy, give us the lowdown. Green Bay, Wisconsin is not home.
No, it's not home anymore. My husband's family lives here. So we are visiting for the Easter weekend.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
It didn't work because it was, yeah.
Troy, what do you have going on?
Oh my gosh. What's happening is it seems like I have this statement I keep saying, all the companies are taking 2 years worth of sitting idle and trying to cram it into this, you know, this year. They're trying to take 2 years worth of work and meetings and projects and get them all done. So, I mean, I've got travel left and right. We are nonstop. We're turning down more projects, which is painful. There's literally more events and presentation requests than people can handle. So shows, lots of big screens again. I'm very excited. This week, while this releases, I will be in LA. I won't say where, but I have 19 LED walls that I get to fill with all PowerPoint is driving it all. So it's very cool. Very exciting.
Nice. Fabulous. I'll get some
photos. How about you, Nolan? What's up?
Well, we just started demolition on the back of our house. We're putting on an addition that, supposed to happen well over a year ago, but anyway, we're starting. They're not here today, so you won't hear any banging, but that's what I'm looking out on
Fun,
my window
exciting.
Right now.
Exciting. I can't wait to live vicariously through you.
Oh, well, I've already been pinging you on questions as we need to. You're the pro when it comes to remodeling. I'm getting ready for Creative Pro Week in DC next month, so I just finished up my sessions for that. Some design work for some old and new foundation clients, you know, just trying to save the world. and my usual assortment of trainings. But I did kind of a new one for a client, which was more focused on real tactical PowerPoint training, which went pretty well. So I always tell people, like, we don't do software training, but this is real tactical.
So what do you mean by that?
How to work faster and more efficiently and that is something we always cover, but usually it's just sort of a small module, and this was really mostly about that. We had people doing demos and exercises and things. So I'm maybe expanding the training a little bit in that direction.
Yeah, that's cool. You've developed this custom one, and now you've got it for other training modules.
Yeah.
Great. Well,
Sandy, are you doing on work site? We heard you're out of town and graciously joining us from remote locations, but how's
you know what? Busy
design?
With cool sales presentations. I know it sounds boring, but it's just fun to be able to tell different kinds of companies' stories. So sales presentations, I'm working on keynote presentations, tons of templates. And by keynote, I don't mean the software, I mean keynotes for people. One organization that I'm working with wants a template each for their board read-ahead slides. So they present to the board when they have board meetings, but they have a special file that they send to read ahead. I'm making sure that template then can potentially easily transfer to their shareholder presentation slides. So I'm building a template for that. Their sales presentation template. A keynote presentation template. And I've done that before, but I've always treated keynote presentation templates as a one-off. So I really have to give some thought about what would go in a keynote presentation template. And I'm working on their training presentation templates, their sales aids, their one-pagers. Most of all of that is going to be in PowerPoint.
Well, it sounds like we have the right topic today for you.
Indeed. I am. And very importantly, I'm very grateful that they're moving from a Google house to a Microsoft house, because I could not do that. I'd be working till retirement on just these templates if I had to do that in Google.
Well, we're gonna talk about templates all today, but you want to do some news?
Let's talk news. Hey, and I'm going to start because I have a question about this news item, because I think I may have missed a step. SlideWise released version 1.6. It's an update, has a couple of new features. Now, the updated feature that I am noticing, that I am loving, by the way, is the replace font dialog has been kind of revamped. You can now do the drop down and it lets you checkmark all the fonts you want to change. Then you pick the font you want to change to, and you hit go instead of doing them one by one. Now, I realize I went from version 1.4 to 1.6, so I think I missed an update along the way. Is this brand new to, or just new to me?
No, I think it's new to you, because that's been there for quite some time, as far as I know, because that's one of the big, powerful parts of it. You can swap out, you know, 10 fonts at a time for another one.
May I ask 1.3? I don't know how I missed this, but no, it just happened because we use it all the time. In fact, I'm gonna probably save this as my tech tip for the very end, but it just changed for me, and I am loving SlideWise because it can do a lot. By the way, I just had a 4 gig file. It actually started life as a Keynote file, so I instantly knew when it was converted to PowerPoint. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna have to go and swap slides because it's almost inevitable. It's gonna use some Mac OS fonts. So I go in there, it had like 70, it was in the 70s range of number of fonts. It was supposed to have two, by the way, three, because there was a specialty font. and a 4 gig file, it takes a while for it to think it through. So I'm just going with SlideWise does have a new update. I'm just not sure if the feature I'm enjoying is brand new or kind of came in a little bit earlier and I somehow missed that update, but they have a new update. Update it.
You know what? It's probably been there the whole time. I still go through one font at a time just to check it. So I haven't been using the mass. I didn't know. This is good information.
I use it all the time. Occasionally it won't replace when it comes to the theme font. And so in those cases, sometimes I'll then try to do it, you know, one by one. But it's just check. You can do that. And just Troy, you talk with the New Power guys all the time, and you're probably aware their minds keep going. So they just emailed me the other day. They were like, "What if it did this?" So we were talking about it. So we're not, you know, we don't know if it's actually going to make it into the program, but they're cool. Continuing to develop it.
They are reaching out. Yeah, we have an ongoing conversation right now on a couple of other ideas. I'm like, what if it's something like this were possible? Because I haven't seen a pop up anywhere else.
So actually, if you guys have any, you know, wishes for that, let us know. We'll pass it along.
Absolutely. They're sort of eager to
improve it. Sandy, what do you have?
Well, this is one that you would think could have been taken care of 10 years ago. But you know that little, when you're hiding slides, you have to hit the option to hide slide to unhide a slide too?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's gone away with the recent updates in Office 365.
It's just silliness.
Awesome. You know, and we'll put the link to the description in the show notes, but it's pretty basic. What it does is it tells you when to hide and unhide versus hide and hide.
Yeah, because a hidden slide, when you'd right click, it would still say hide slide. It's like, well, I know it's hidden, so it was a toggle. Yeah, I think it's really
every little bit helps.
It does. No, this is a smart one.
Every you know click that we can take away is.
Oh my gosh!
I told them
that
for years. I just said,
don't get me started on Outlook changes.
Yeah,
we won't go there.
We have no.
What you got, Nolan?
PowerPoint for Cameo has come to the Mac. Currently, it's Insider Fast, so. Have to wait a little bit longer to get it on the main channel. But so far, I've tested it out. Seems to work just the same way as it does on the PC. Works really well. And Troy, you use Cameo for a last-minute pre-record you had to do for Present to Succeed. Everybody else was live, but you had a conflict, right? So you had to, at the last minute, put it on tape.
I will put it out there. Not to make light of this at all, there was a death. It was not in our family, but I took over a project. It was kind of a last minute thing. Like, yes, I will step in so you can step away. And, you know, things like that happened. But it happened right before, you know, and where I was going to be, I'm like, okay, hotel Wi-Fi. I'm in a meeting session according to this agenda. So I did. I actually used Cameo to record my camera on there. It turned out really good.
It did.
Not quite as good as I want. I had to take a few of the transitions away, and it might be because of the computer I was using. I was using my Surface because that's the only one I have on the Fast Insider. So Nolan, just like you were saying on the Mac, for me, I don't have it on all of our computers. Only my Surface computer has it because that's the one I have as a private Office 365. I was impressed with it. I mean, it could have been better.
No, it was good. And I could tell you were playing with it because, you know, sort of, you know, testing it out, you know, how the transitions work and things. But it was nice. It was really nice to see. And it worked. It worked quite well.
Okay, yeah. I've got one more news item here, and this one's. I think we'll see more of these announcements because Microsoft won't have these announcements going forward. So here, this is from Microsoft, the quoted element. After 5 years of mainstream support and 5 years of extended support, so 10 years, Office 2013, so the actual purchase and install, will reach the end of extended support on April 11th, 2023.
You have a year.
So you've got 1 year still. They're announcing this a year out. If you don't have Office 2023 deployed in your environment, i.e. you never bought it and installed it, you could just disregard this message.
And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I did have a client this year that many of them were still on 2013.
And the reason you won't hear it anymore is because Office 365 is perpetual. They're always updating it. They don't have to worry. And the really big thing, it basically says it's the same as all their things. It's you won't receive security updates, and they have this whole statement about continued use of it will basically expose your organization to security risks that Microsoft cannot assist with. So anyways, I just thought I'd throw that. It was an email. I get all these announcements from Microsoft. That one stood out because it talked about Office. Wow. But yeah, so yeah, it's been 10 years since Office 2013. How's that?
It was a good one.
In March, Nolan spoke at the Creative Pro Design Plus Plus PowerPoint, right? Did I say that right, Nolan? Is it the Creative PowerPoint? Okay, I almost got it right there. But Nolan did a talk in March on PowerPoint template hacks and his process for creating templates. It's stellar. And then just in April, just last week, I spoke on PowerPoint templates, and I did 9 tips every business presenter needs to know and leverage for using templates. And I did that at the Present to Succeed conference. So, and then on our last episode with a group of PowerPoint MVPs, we spent some time talking about PowerPoint templates. And already in this intro, Sandy has talked about PowerPoint templates. So this particular episode, Nolan, Sandy, and myself, we're expanding on those conversations, and we're very much focused on why a PowerPoint template is a powerful tool to leverage. We're going to talk about some of the template design tips and some best practices for PowerPoint templates. So I'm really excited about this conversation. Let's get started. Okay, before we go into the template details, I just want to get kind of a check ourselves here. How often do you create templates, and do you create them in PowerPoint, Mac Keynote, Google Slides, other presentation software? Go.
Oh, geez. Can we talk about something first, like what a template is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably good. Well, probably smart.
Yeah. For the sake of a discussion, and this is, of course, going to focus on PowerPoint because I can't speak to the other programs, but a fully functioning PowerPoint template is a subset of a Microsoft Office theme. And that's when you see a file that's Microsoft Office theme, it's .thmx. We just call it a ThemeX file. So once you're in PowerPoint templates, you need to program the theme colors, theme fonts, and I suppose effects, but I don't use those very often anymore. So I kind of ignore those, which maybe I should be embarrassed, but that's the truth there.
No.
But templates also include slide masters, sample slides, and in their book, Julie and Echo mention including macros in their templates. So what's really cool, and I'm just going to add this too, it's a little bit confusing because themes are office wide. You'd think you would create them before you started creating a PowerPoint presentation, but the easiest way to create a theme is when you're in PowerPoint. You can export the theme and apply it to Word and Excel files. And I guess I should add the extension for a power an official PowerPoint template is .pptx.
Well, or .potx, which
is... Oh, that's what I meant. I'm so sorry. Yeah, typo.
It could be
in my head.
We don't distribute a lot of POTXs because it confuses people.
I know.
I think it's a great thing because you can never overwrite it unless you go save as and save it specifically as another POTX. Let's not get into those details. Let's say themes are big. Most people do not leverage even half of the options available. And do you create those in PowerPoint, Keynote, Google Slides, other like Canva presentation software, Sandy?
Well, I only PowerPoint. Like all the time in PowerPoint, but and rarely in Google, as I mentioned at the top of the show, and never in Keynote. I've never touched a Keynote.
Yeah, template. I used to work in Keynote. I don't anymore, so I don't do Google or Keynote. So it's pretty much PowerPoint these days for me. I would just completely outsource a Google template. But I also guide people away from that, you know, in general, because, you know, it's one thing to do a Google presentation, but if you're really looking to have a powerful template for your organization, Google is going to frustrate you, you know.
Do you just have to have those in the cloud, Google templates, or can you build them for desktop use? How does that work? That sounds so
Google,
ignorant.
I think you can view Google offline. So yeah.
You know, I've never actually built an actual template using the offline. I always edit in the offline.
Okay.
They have an offline version, but it always relies on the fact that you're going to go back online to connect and get more. And I'm just going to wrap up for me, PowerPoint. Keynote projects, Apple, Mac, Keynote are very few. Over the past few years, because we used to do a lot of Keynote work. And you know what? Keynote is highly visual. So whenever anybody gives us a Keynote project, it's not a corporate template. They're like looking at a show that, you know, they want the, for whatever reason, they're using Keynote. Usually it's because that's the equipment they already have spec'd. And it's, so I rely on slide level design versus template presets because we're designers designing. It's a blank canvas. Google Slides are a very rare project for us still. And we started for a particular request just a little while ago. We did kind of an A-B, or like, here's what we can accomplish in PowerPoint. Here's what you can more or less not accomplish in Google Slides, or here's what your core elements are. Are you okay with these limitations? And that was, as you're saying, Nolan, that kind of drove them there. Maybe I should expand that list and make it something.
That's a great list. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, it was kind of made up on the, you know, it was kind of like a, you know, opening up both programs and just talking through it and making a little list. But now I'm thinking about it, maybe that should be a good blog post series. Okay, what else we got?
Sandy, you jumped in this. I was going to ask everybody how you sort of define a template. I think you did that pretty well. Although I the way I kind of define it, and also using, you know, Julian Echo's sort of guidelines, I actually kind of see it a little the other way around. I think you said a template is a subset of a theme. I see a template. I see a theme actually being a part of a template because I think that a theme includes the theme. So that means your color palette, your fonts, your layouts, and your masters. But then it's not really a template until you add sample slides and boilerplate content and sort of library content as well. That's the way I view it. So, you know, I actually have a little graphic when I explain it. It's like, all right, you got your theme and then you add all this other stuff and then that equals your template.
It's first thing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would say a template. Okay. So now we got into this template versus theme thing. Templates are what we're going to talk about. Themes have a bigger ecosystem, and I think very few people understand them, and even fewer corporate level clients take advantage of them. I was so excited when they first came out. I think they've lost a little steam, but the power is still there. But I'm going to say absolutely PowerPoint is where we do 90%+ of the design work when we're talking templates. Mm-hmm. And I also agree with what Nolan said a few moments ago, is that PowerPoint has the most preset options, the strongest set of tools to create a document that assists presenters and everyone creating slides or managing slides to align with brand guidelines of any type. I mean, they have the most consistency elements of any of the tools out there.
I agree. I agree.
Could be better, but yes.
Always could be better. But yeah, when you do a comparison against the others, like I said, with Keynote, we don't even start with the master slides. It's very, very rare because we're just doing visual design. We're trusting design level designer skills versus a template to assist.
Yeah. And when I did work in Keynote, I basically did what you did because it was sort of usually a one-off and you'd set colors and fonts, but each slide was just a blank canvas where you would sort of be,
which is a great mentality to bring to any type of design work, by the way. PowerPoint is a canvas, but you just happen to have a bunch of preset options.
Presets, yes. And I love that you're using that term, and you did in your presentation at Present to Succeed, that, you know, calling that those preset options. I think that's an easy differentiation. So on that note then, for PowerPoint, let's generate a list of key features that needs to be a part of the design process for a true full-featured template.
All right. Well, again, it's on this theme topic, on this theme. Color palette and theme fonts, those are a part of a theme. And again, as you mentioned, like that applies to Excel and Word too. So if you are able to get the theme into there, and we could talk about that too, into those other programs, you have your color palette and you have your theme fonts. And a lot of people just don't realize that they're sort of cross-app in that way.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, if there's a brand, I would say, you know, to your question, if there's a brand guide for, and there isn't always, but if there is, then obviously these things, the palette and the font, need to be informed by that. I always ask my clients, do you do this? I always ask them, how close do we need to hold to the brand guidelines? I mean, in some case, you want to be, they're great brand guidelines and you know, another kid, but it's always good to know. Sometimes I've had clients say, oh, we hate them, do whatever you want. Or, you know, like, oh, we'll get yelled at if you, you know, move a pixel or something. So it's just good to know how much flexibility you have.
Another one is the use of the master layout slide in the slide master, which is so confusing. But it's that connection. When you're working in masters, you need to understand that there's a connection between the master slide and the master layouts. And many, many people will ignore the master slide. That they'll leave it blank. They'll remove the placeholders from it, and they will then design each layout independent of the master slide.
We see it all the time.
Yeah, all the time. That's one of the first things I'll look at when someone is asking me to build a
I'm going to take it even more grand. Well, first of all, I'm going to say color scheme. And actually using it, not just the colors or spec, but picking it from the theme colors. Because you can use the eyedropper tool and pick up the blue of the template, and then you've got the right blue, but it's not an actual coded theme color. Using the theme colors as the actual selection makes a huge difference, especially the going forward. I'm always talking about a template is for the next person, or when you receive the file, are you going to yell at the person or be very upset with them? Or did they actually leverage the things in there and make your life easier? Or did they make it, because you're making life easier or harder either for yourself in the future or somebody else. So using the theme colors is there, using the master layouts, understanding what they are. But I'm going to go even a little more granular. The presets for text boxes. What is the text size? What is the text font? What is the bullet type? This is the big one that gets me. They are preset, even to the point of, like you said, it's not exciting to do sales presentations. Hey, Sandy, we're knee deep in, I don't know, 300-400 slides HIV research. It's not exciting, but the exciting part is trying to make them all consistent, because we have these charts from all over. It's like, so, but what I'm going at is, the template does have a brand guideline of what font to use and what bullet to use. So we have extraneous, you know, additional text boxes. We're using the Format Painter or the eyedropper tool to pick up those bullet styles and apply them to all the other text boxes to make sure everything's consistent. The template gives you the freedom to say, I know what to do quickly. I mean, okay, there. I guess it can get really granular.
You mentioned the importance of really using the theme colors. We, in my agency days, we would have a sort of standard template, but we would skin it sometimes for the client, and we would do it. And I did this on a recent project by changing one chip, it ripples through the whole deck. And so this is also one of my tests at the end. You know, I'll look at everything in slide sorter mode and sort of change the color palette and see, like, all the colors, did they all change? Oh, if one didn't, that means I didn't, like, that one wasn't applied from the palette.
Right.
So
from the theme palette.
The theme, yeah. So that's a cool test.
That's a good test. I like that a lot. Yep. Add that to the list.
Okay, here's a question. What is so going along kind of the theme that you had there, Sandy, of what are key features, what's a core template setup item? So, you know, there are all these preset items in PowerPoint for making a template. They make presets. What's one that you see often missing from a file that you get delivered being called, here, this is our template? And you go, oh, wait, it doesn't have blank.
Well, going back to my definition, sample content and boilerplate. Like, if you just have the blank empty slides, I don't know what to do with it. Like, I don't know what this thing is supposed to look like. So again, to me, that is just such a key part of it that I try to drill into clients' heads.
I got to jump right in now. Sandy, I know you probably have a great one, but hold on.
Go ahead.
Based on exactly what you said, Nolan, I have the exact opposite. So I'm doing an upcoming tech conference, and the association built the template. And man, I am using really big, fictitious quotes here, because it is not, they said, here is our template. They built it all in Canva. It does look beautiful. Canva has really great design aesthetics to create, especially for non-designers. I've received a slide deck. It's 12, maybe 14 slides, and they're example slides, and that's all they are. They're slides. There is nothing on the master slide. Yeah. There is nothing, but there is no preset theme.
That's not it.
Colors, there is no fonts. What they've given me is, here is an example, or follow these ideas. This is not a template, and they're calling it a template. Anybody that uses it is totally, they insert a new slide, they get blank white. I mean, it's a horrible use of it. Now, I don't really care. It's a 3-day conference, and I'm like, great, I'll work with it. You guys are idiots. Sure. To call that, you know, to roll this out to all your presenters and say, here, please build your slides, you know, using our template. Horrible mistake. Luckily, I'm not on that meeting planning team to explain to hear all the presenters. Well, I will hear them backstage. Okay. So that's what I think is missing, is that a lot of people call something a template. It's really a set of sample slides. There is no template elements that make it an actual functioning template. What do you got, Sandy?
As I think you called it, a collection of slides.
Yes.
It's not template in the PowerPoint sense. Yes. Okay.
Sometimes we use the word jumble of slides, because it's not even a collection. It's just a bunch of slides.
I like that. I'm going to answer this question on giving an example of how I uncover whether it's a true functioning template or not. Typically, we've got a discovery call set up, and they want me to create a presentation for them. I make it clear to them that one of my requirements is that I have a fully functioning template to build out a full presentation. So I say, okay, show me your template. And I have them click on a fill box or a font, and I say, okay, now open the color tool. And right away, that's usually the default Microsoft colors. It's not, the theme colors have not been programmed. Period. The other is, and I don't know if you guys find this, but they may go so far as to change the font in the Slide Master, but they won't
change the theme font.
They won't change the theme font.
I know
font.
That.
Yeah.
I know.
Just so those two things.
So you kind of like shame them. You have them walk.
I do because
I'll send an analysis list, you know, in an email. But
usually those people aren't the ones that created it. They created the sales presentation based on the template.
Have you ever been told that their PowerPoint template is in their brand guide? And so you look at their brand guide, and it's just some JPEGs of what it should look like. And you say, okay, well, where's the file? And they're like, well, we don't have one. Okay, so you need one to be created.
Yeah. It's an opportunity for additional business.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and I mentioned this before, but that was the situation that led to one of my favorite articles I wrote, which was I get paid $2,000 an hour for PowerPoint, which is what it, you know, broke down to of creating, you know, very quickly a basic template from a brand style guide for a pharma company. Because they got to it and they were like, oh, where's our file? I said, they said our designer did it for us. I said, no, they didn't. It's just a raster image. Anyway, what's your process, or do you have a process? Do you have like a clear defined process when you create a template?
Well, you go first. I do. But what's yours, Nolan?
Well, I've got a checklist and a starter file. So I've got in Excel, I have a very long checklist that's always being updated and massaged and everything. And I actually gave that away at the Creative Pro Summit. And then I have a starter file, which is basically the first, I don't know, 25 or 30 steps of that that checklist, just so I don't have to do them each time. Although I rebuild the starter file every once in a while. And that's it. And then, you know, I'm lazy, so I pick the low-hanging fruit first, like putting the color palette in and adding the custom colors. And, you know, if we're going to do that, by the way, I think we might talk about custom colors, but you really want to do that as early as possible, mm-hmm. because sometimes farther down in the process, it doesn't work anymore, at least using the Brightslide plugin, which again,
right, that can is the way create I do some additional artifacts on your slides if you use the plugin later.
And then sometimes they just won't take it all, which I don't understand, but mm-hmm. you know, so try to do that early on.
Okay. So we actually have a file that it's been evolving literally over the decade plus. It's called the TLC Master Build a Template file. I mean, it is a monster of information. It is not available externally. It is definitely our IP. And anybody that got it would probably just freak out because there are so many if this, then do this type of scenarios. I mean, it's hundreds of slides. But to your point, Nolan, step number one after the title slide of what it is set the background style. Are you going to use light or dark? Because mm-hmm. if you do mm-hmm. any design work and then you decide, oh, this is going to be dark backgrounds, I want to set my background style to be, you know, like the black color so that when you insert a chart, it picks up the axis lines and, you know, makes white text or whatever your light mm-hmm. color, your accent is. If you change that down the road, it can wipe out everything. You got to do it way up front. Otherwise, it becomes a frustration factor. Probably a reason people hate building templates because they don't think about those details until it's too late. And then they're like, well, wait, I'm just going to hit Control Z and call it done because this is a lot of work. But anyways, yeah. So we actually have a starter file, if you will, but we have, you know, we have a whole process for building because we do literally hundreds of templates because we're doing them for corporate events, one-off events, award shows. So I think we get to do more templates than most, but we also don't get to see ours live long lives. It's like, well, word show's done. It said 2022. We'll never see that one again. You know, but we build a lot of templates. We do have a master set. A checklist is kind of what it is, just a robust one. Sandy, what do you do?
Well, pretty much the same. I do have a master checklist. So I would say in general, I'm doing the same thing as you. The first three would be the background color, the fonts, and the themes. But before I even start that, I do a slide audit. And I'm not saying of the client's slides because I need to know what their content looks like. Every company presents a little bit differently. We end up having standard slide layouts all the time, but I want to understand if they're an architectural firm, they're going to need really great photo layouts and multiple options of photo layouts. And I help with that. So the first step I always do, it could take 5 minutes, it could take a day, is a slide audit of their existing presentations.
That's good. Do you ever do an audit and call it a day? I mean, does anybody ask you just to do an analysis? I've done that a couple times.
I have been asked to vet their templates, and I think I've done it a couple of times in my career. I have not.
Because you always wonder what they're going to do with it.
Yes, exactly. Go ahead.
No, I was occasionally it's to make the case to the higher ups for later work. So sometimes I've done it, and then ultimately, you know, a year later, 6 months later, actually remade their template.
One large health insurer had just had their template built. They had bought a third party slide library tool and converted everything and uploaded it to this tool. And then I saw their template and I wrote I thought they needed to understand what was wrong with it. And I wrote a very comprehensive audit report and they ended up changing everything. So it worked out. Yes. But what's something you wish that PowerPoint would do better for templates.
Okay, we just got done saying how it does so many things good,
yes.
But this list is not short.
All right, you kick it off, Troy.
Yeah, Troy.
Oh, well, my number one request is, if I had to have a request, would be a really in-depth one. And that would be, I would love for PowerPoint to actually map the placeholder IDX values. Those are the things, like every time you create a placeholder on a master layout, it gets a value. Well, say you have my common example is, say we have a thank you slide with two people, you know, one person, two people, four people, five, you know, they have like five different variations of this thank you slide, 'cause depending on how many people are speaking. Well, you set it up for two and you go, oh, now Nolan's going to present with us. Well, we switch it to the three, the preset values of those placeholders are not, well, those placeholders values are not preset. So suddenly Nolan's head is over Sandy's name because it remapped them to places we can't control. So this is really, really in depth, and it's a code level thing. And it really, really needs to be done to make some of these more, there are third party code solutions out there, coders that build this, and they actually manually kind of say, okay, we're going to pick this up, remove it, and place it into this placeholder. It's a lot of work to make this type of stuff happen. It seems like it should be a code level thing.
Because, yeah, currently, just as a rough example, when that happens is it does it by order of when those placeholders were put on, right? Put on the slide.
Yes, but not always.
I know. But
I mean, we've done that. We've rebuilt slides with, you know, we've mapped them out. We print it out and said, this is number one, this is number two, and we put them all in there, and then we build it, and then it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it also just comes down to, if you have like four image placeholders, which one is going to get filled first? Mm-hmm. And I actually had to do that on a recent template, because we had all these collage slides, and there were certain parts of the collage that were more important, that should be like the hero shot and everything. So we had to, after I had built all this and realized, ugh, it's not doing it in the right order, I had to go back and basically delete one and put one back in and move them around to make them fill in the proper order, which was probably not they're probably going to end up just clicking and, you know, doing it themselves. So it's a mood issue. But for me, just having OCD, I had to do that. For me, things that I wish they did better. How about just paragraph and text styles?
That's a great idea.
Incorporating the logo into the footer. Maybe, you know, just helping
you
us.
You mean a logo placeholder?
A logo placeholder, but yeah. Also maybe a logo part of the footer, so you can turn it on and off easily.
I see. Mm-hmm. Good, smart.
Yeah. What was it? Oh, and that thing I did for Creative Pro, I gave, was it five or six different techniques for toggling the logo? Because we do get asked, like, what if I want the logo not to be there? And it depends how you put it in. Depending on how you put it in, you can hide it in different ways. And there are always different solutions. But yeah, that's something
ongoing issues. Yeah. I want to be able to lock the placeholders on the slide masters. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a recent move forward by Microsoft that we added locking capabilities on the slide, but we can't do it on the master. So it really doesn't help us as much. And I wish we could eliminate standard colors from the palette.
Yep, that would be nice. Mm-hmm. All right.
On that, I have a beef with that whole.
Okay,
Sandy, exactly what you just said, because the little padlock icon is available when you open up the selection pane. I was so excited because when you go into a master layout, it's there. The padlock is there. So if you click a text box and you lock it, you can't move it on the master layout. You go out and you add a new slide, it's movable.
I know.
So you can't change the master layout. So I guess the idea is it makes it so that your reset functionality of a layout, which I think is an amazing tool. I wish that could be a little more granular to reset this element, not the entire slide. But I guess it means that your reset, you always know what it's going to be because you can't mess up the layouts. But it seems like, you know, in other words, I'm placing this text box here on the master layout. I can't move it on the master layout unless I go and, you know, into the selection pane and unlock it. So mm-hmm. I know it's always going to be there. So the reset's always going to do it. But when you go to the slide level, people can move it around. Right. It's like, no, but I locked it. So I think there's just different levels of thought process. And I was so disappointed. You just happened to bring up a hot topic for me where I was like, no, I was totally excited and then disappointed. And then I rethought it and said, ah, yeah, I guess there's a reason for it, but it just doesn't make. Okay. What are we talking about?
How about a tip?
Okay.
What's your tip to people making templates?
Well, I think the easiest tip, I mean, I didn't think a lot about it. It's whether you're an experienced designer or you're just getting started in this, or you're the new marketing assistant at a corporation, by Julian Echo's book.
Yeah,
that's the easiest. You know,
the template, that's version the low bar. 2. The checklist is in the back. If you don't want to read the book, go to the checklist in the back.
That's where mine started from, and I just, you know, personalized it. I would say just test your template before sending to a client. There have been times I've even paid people to review it and run through it like an average user. You know, if you've got it just means, you know, inserting all your layouts and putting content. It can get a little tedious, but you know, making sure all the colors are there, running it through slide-wise. But yeah, and that's always the thing that we'll talk more about that. But I don't like about templates is all the double checking and the crossing mm-hmm. the T's and the dotting the I's and does it work? And, you know, then, you know, months later you get an email from a client saying, you know, this doesn't work. I'm like, or, you know, you find an error. You know,
hey, Nolan, later. I've got a great answer with that. I mean, I seriously do. We usually say, oh, I am so sorry. The thing about Microsoft, there's like 9 different ways to do everything. Of course, if we had used Google Slides, that wasn't even an option. Like, you know, so take your, which one do you want? Because it does happen. And a lot of it is those layouts. I'm surprised you didn't say, we use Bright Slides theme colors feature for building templates add the custom color scheme, like instantly and fast and visually mm-hmm. see it. You know, and also adding the third level of tertiary colors, like additional
colors.
Yeah. Which used to be a major endeavor on a XML mm-hmm. code level to get those in there. Bright Slide has made it, thanks guys, mm-hmm. like a consumer level thing to have happen now. People figure it out and they're like, oh, I could just add all these extra colors and it's easy. It used to be, mm-hmm. you know, we used to have literally XML coding experts to do it. Anyways, that's my tip, is use Bright Slide. It's a free add-in on both. Now, hold on, Nolan, because I don't use it on the Mac as much. Their theme color mm-hmm. tool is on the Mac. Okay, yeah, it's phenomenal.
You can't. Can you put the? No, you can't put the custom colors in on the Mac. I don't think.
But can I add another one? Another tip?
Sure. See, this could go on for a long time.
I know. It's part of my flow, and I'm at. You know, we talked about processes. My beginning is the audit. My last thing that I do, I bet 95% of the time with my corporate clients, is I convince them to make a big deal out of launching this template. Mm. So often what happens is no one knows it's there. Mm-hmm. And people are saving as with their old template, and, you know, just awful, awful work habits continue to be employed. So I train power users. I videotape training sessions. We launch the PowerPoint template as often as possible, making a big deal out of it.
Awareness is
huge.
You got to know the templates there, and you got to know that there. That's what my whole talk at Present to Succeed was, is you got to know what is available in a template. When you receive a template, it should give you all these superpowers that everybody can use. Okay, so going on that whole process thing, I have a question. Microsoft has, I'm just going to say, 9 basic layouts. So there's a master slide and 9 preset layouts. Do you keep them? Do you change them? Just as part of your normal, I'm going to say the normal, every client has special requests, but what do you generally do with them?
I usually keep them all, even though Julian Echo say we don't have to keep them all, but I generally do, except for those Asian vertical layouts.
I use most of them. And for the most part, I keep their names the same. I will add custom layouts as needed.
And that's, exactly. Mm-hmm. We include them with their original naming, with the thought that there is a 20-year legacy of files with those names. So I would like them to have something to map to. So no matter what, the chances of importing a slide using an existing Microsoft template, an existing Microsoft layout is pretty high. So if you have it in there, it's ready to go. I would say we create more layouts with the knowledge that 50%+ of them will never be used, but they're in there and they're ready to be used.
Yeah, but also the likelihood of importing a another template in which those layouts are actually correct, original, and originally named. Yeah, that's pretty low. But
and without using keep source formatting. Exactly. So anyways, if they're removed or renamed, you know, they're just most likely going to create additional problems. Again, I'm always forward thinking on templates. How do we make it easier for you know, end users? So we keep them all except for the Asian ones. We got rid of those a long time ago. And from what I see, and they're not in our build a template, and I don't see them in the default ones. So there's that.
So how about page sizes? Do you use different, you know, what slide size?
It's almost always 16:9, but I did just do a law firm template, the one that was still on 2013 in 7.5 by 10, because they just can't let go of it. Ultimately, they asked me to do the widescreen a little after. And every once in a while, I get to do an 8.5 by 11 vertical for print purposes. Actually, kind of what you were talking about earlier on. You were doing that board book, the mm-hmm. pre-read. Mm-hmm. I've done for one client. They that's how they deliver their board. They call it their board book before each quarterly board meeting, and they do that in PowerPoint. But it's an 8.5 by 11 vertical.
That's great.
So it's always nice to do that.
I'm the same. I mean, basically what you just described. And a lot. I don't have. How about you, Troy?
So let me start off with this analogy about page size. Whenever we get a file, we look at the page size, because if it's 10 by 5.625, yes. we know it's a very, you know, if it's the 26 inch wide, page size, we know it started life in Keynote. Mm-hmm. If it's 19 inch, it started life in Google Slides. If we see it's the default, 13.333 by 7.5 inch, we know we've at least got a Microsoft file, like it started life there, or somebody maintained it. We're 16 by 9 for virtually everything. And I like to maintain the 7.5 inch height. So if I have to do an ultra wide scenario, which I'm very excited about because we're suddenly doing again, because events are happening not on the small screen, they're happening on big stages. I'll make it, you know, if it's, you know, 40 foot wide by 12 foot high, I'll keep the PowerPoint size at 7.5 inches tall, and then I'll adjust the width for the right aspect ratio. That way I know assets being brought in from other slides, existing slide decks, should be proportional to, you know, the real world of this ultra wide. But so yeah, so page size is kind of funny. I first look at it, or I'd say everybody on our team looks at it to like, what are we working with? But if we're designing, almost everything 16 by 9, there's very, very few 4 by 3 needs. Financial industry, and they're mainly doing it for print. It's a print layout document for them.
Right. Which, and of course, it fits on a letterhead, but it really should be 8.5 by 11 if that's all you're doing. But,
exactly.
Yeah. And but it's hard to get them to convince to do that. What do you like most and least? We've talked a lot about that, but specifically, Sandy, what do you like most and what do you like least about doing templates?
I used to be terrified to have to program custom colors. I mean, I could do it, but for some reason it put the fear of God in me. So I actually really enjoy it now, using the Bright Slide.
You go. Yeah.
I love it. I love being able to tell my clients when I have access to their corporate branding color, branding document, and I understand they have an expansive color palette, or a lot of clients have project management colors that are completely different from their regular color theme. I love telling them that I can do that for them. Mm-hmm. I can program that for you.
Yeah,
it's nice. Wonderful.
It's a great value add. I like making icon libraries. I used to not, but I sort of get into that swing of it. And just sort of generally figuring out solutions for the user, how they, you know, specifically how they want to use it. I don't like when they make changes on their own to the templates and send it back to me. Just it always, no matter what I say, and they'll say, "Oh, well, we didn't want to bother you." It's like, oh God, but now I broke everything.
We just
added a few more placeholders to that. Well, that breaks everything. I really don't like having to deal with tables, because there's just no good solution for setting a default or getting users to format them in the preferred design way that I would like them to. So you're always coming up with, there's just no perfect solution on tables, and that's frustrating.
Oh, I can make that my most liked and least liked is just tables. The fact that there is actually a way to preset them, as long as you're using one of the Microsoft defined options.
Yeah, but they're never good. Modify.
Yeah. They're, well, we always set one of them, but it's
You set one. You set the least obnoxious one.
Set the right, like, a light.
Okay. So I like our template product. I mean, my focus is on making a template a mini style guide for everyone. And that's what I like most because, you know, a style guide, I think most people listening to us, you know, joining us here, they're on the design front. They get to, they know what a style guide is to begin with, and they get to get access to it. I mean, it's an amazing resource, but I think very few in a larger company receive it or actually have access to it. But the corporate PowerPoint template, everybody has access to that. So one of our big value adds and sells is we're going to make this not only with all of your preset layouts, but we're going to have information in there, a mini style guide about what font to use, what colors to use, what, why you use these colors or where you use these colors. So they're not only programmed in, we're giving it there. And then we create, Nolan, I didn't catch what you call them, but we often create what we call the copy paste library, kind of a set of slides that have like optimized versions of the logo for the company logo. I mean, how many times do you do an interview with the people of the company and they say, you know, where do you get your logo for the company? Oh, I just hop online and I search for our company name. And I, you know, and they, some are smart enough to put .svg or .png. I'm like, you're going out to the internet to get a version of your logo and put it in. You don't know the quality, you know. So we put an optimized version of all the logos in there, and it really becomes a well-received product. And the PowerPoint template just becomes that much more value, becomes a core. So I like that. On the worst about templates, it's probably knowing the technical limitations of templates. Like, I wish we could make it do this, or wouldn't it be great if we could? And, you know, wishing Microsoft would update and help people with those things. So I think my worst thing about templates is just knowing what could be and isn't there yet.
We do those things. We always do a logo slide. We do graphic, you know, shapes and sometimes icons and other stuff. So we call those library slides. But we also, I've been doing a lot more grab and go slides for elements, that things like subheads or sidebars that we used to like program into a layout. Like, let's say there'd be a layout with a sidebar and one without, and it just got to be too much, and nobody knew how to find the layout. So same thing with subheads. We're just like, here's the page, copy and paste, and it'll go right into this, to the spot. It'll paste into where it should be, and it's just easier rather than having like multiple
grab
layouts
and go. I like that.
That actually brings us to the next question we were going to ask, and that's about interesting and unusual things that you have to put into a template.
Give an example, Sandy.
Well, it's what Nolan just described. It's a different use of the template, and I use that for legal statements for financial institutions, and that's different from the footer. It's I'll place it in the sample slides. I will place this legal statement, and that legal statement is something like, you know, if you invest money based on this slide, you might lose money. You know, that's basically what that is. And so I write those instructions. I will convert it to a shape using BrightSlide, and then with instruction to say, I'll have it in the location it needs to be on the slide, because you don't apply it to every slide, only certain slides. And so I provide the instructions, copy and paste, and leave it where it lands. And so I think that's a unique approach. Maybe, Nolan, I should be using your tricks for hiding logos. Maybe that would apply there. I like your, what did you call it? Plug and play?
Grab and go.
Grab and go. Yes.
Plug and play. So 90s.
I know. How about you, Troy?
I guess I'm going with kind of the same thing, kind of that copy paste library set. We've had some interesting content in there. You know, and sometimes it's just assets. Sometimes we did a whole thing with 3D elements, and, you know, we just created a whole library asset of them, and they were in there. One time it was a library of all the client's competitors' logos. I thought that was a really, you know, we had to go and source all, they gave us a list, like, here's our main competitors, because they wanted their salespeople to be able to say, XYZ company does this, but we do this. And they wanted to represent them well. They didn't want just a generic logo. So it was kind of forward thinking, like, let's actually represent them with their real logo, this and that. So I thought that was a really odd request to have to go look up all the competitors.
I recently did a template for a company that builds theaters and arts complexes, and they asked for a their term, graphic standards toolkit, so they could mark up and highlight blueprints and drawings. So we did that. You know, we tried to mostly use built-in PowerPoint tools and shapes and some guidance on how to do it. But also, you know, we had some custom shapes and brackets and things and show them how to set overlays to increase the contrast and stuff like that. But that was kind of neat. They just, it's, I mean, PowerPoint's an awesome program for that, of just like, let me mark this up, let me highlight this, let me show, you know, over an image. And that's what they did. They sent me something from their, one of the architects they work with who had something similar. And they said, we love this. We do it for us. And I was like, okay.
Great.
Yeah. There's so many great things. Hey, PowerPoint templates, they're not easy to master, as there are literally hundreds of items to look at. There are presets and everything to confirm. In addition, there is what I have labeled, and this is a conversation I have with lots of clients, hey, we're working within the limitations of PowerPoint to make a workflow that works for you, for your request. Or that's not possible, but again, within the limitations of PowerPoint, here's what we could do. So there's a lot of trade-offs a lot of times in building out templates. There are just requests for template design that are great, but do not fit into available PowerPoint formatting options. And experienced presentation designers can get creative with solutions to overcome those limitations. There are dedicated training sessions, articles, and at least one really, really good book on PowerPoint templates by Julie and Echo Swinford titled Building PowerPoint Templates Version 2, because version 1 sold out the full run. Hey, there's stuff out there about this. It's not an easy topic. We had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun, guys, talking and just a few areas of PowerPoint templates here. The important takeaway for me, not everything labeled a template is going to be what we would call a template. I always use the phrase, it is a full-featured template that we're creating. In other words, there are things that are not full-featured. Always design with the end user in mind and make their process easier, faster, and better with a true full-featured template is the statement we like to use, I like to use, when we're providing a template. Thanks for talking. Let's do a little music here and jump back to Pro and Tech Tips. I'm not going to go first. I'm going to let Sandy go first.
Okay. Thank you. I get to go first. Okay. I am giving another Bright Slide tip, something I use every single day. I even use it on my slide masters, and that's the copy size and position. Mm-hmm. And you get that by right-clicking any object on the slide, and you can copy slide size and position, and then you can choose to paste it on another slide. You can choose it. You can choose just to only use the isn't there a place a slide layout that is broken? It never connects to the master. What is that one called?
Is it the two comparison or something?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I use it every single time on that slide because the title is not in place. And the body copy text placeholders aren't in place. So I copy from another title, the title from another slide using that feature. And then I use the paste size and position option, and it is in perfect place.
Yes, that one works in the master, and that's totally fine to do. What you don't want to use is copy paste format. For like a text box, that's going to mess things up.
It's going to mess things up. I really am cautious about using any kind of add-in or even the format painter in the master, but that one I've been able to use successfully. So my recommendation is the Bright Slide size and position, copy size and position tool.
Cool. Mine, I have two Mac items related to my menu bar at the top. The first one is a little program called Bartender, and I use that to hide and customize it. So I don't have all these, because every time you add a program, like it adds a little thing to the top and it gets in the way. So you can add and customize it, and it gives you little three dots where you can expand it. So you don't have to see everything that you don't need until you need it. And you can set exactly what's there and what's not. And then one little item that I've added to it is to my menu bar is a little program, only costs a couple bucks. It's called Forecast, and it's a little weather thing. and you click it and, you know, you get, you know, weather and all that stuff. But basically I just use it so that in my menu bar, I have the current temperature. That's it. So anytime I'm looking out my window, wondering what the temperature is, I just glance at my menu bar and it says 67 Fahrenheit. So it's worth $5 or $6 a year. You know, I spend just to be able to know the weather immediately. Those are my two. Troy, what do you got?
Good ones.
That's hysterical. So you're like, should I go for, I could go for a ride today, but no, I've got client work.
Yes.
I don't know. It sounds like more of a disappointment.
No. Yeah. Well, you don't need it in San Diego where it's always 72 degrees, but for us in the Northeast. Yes.
Pro and tech tips. I'm going to talk about a third party add-in running Slidewise that we were talking about earlier. It has become part of our template design process. We use it to look for those hidden random fonts that just kind of appear. It's like, well, I don't remember using that font ever. It's like, oh, I must have had that font selected and I entered a space. So now there's an empty space with that font assigned to it and I'll never find it. It's just great. We also use it for PowerPoint makeover projects. We run it at the beginning of the process to streamline all the fonts down to what we should be using. And then as we design, we're looking for anything that got, you know, font change. So text boxes and line wraps can change. And again, we run it at the very end, just to make sure we know what fonts are going into or going out with the file. So Slidewise, its replace font feature is just stellar, in my opinion. This is Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, a professional design agency focused on presentations, templates, live events, and more. Find us at tlccreative.com, vxpmeeting.com, and thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. You can check out nolanhamescreative.com/goodies for a lot of stuff. And also that's where you can find our design portfolio and find out about our trainings. And if you go to thebetterdeckdeck.com, that's where you can purchase the Better Deck Deck, the physical copy, the PDF, and the PowerPoint source files. And the physical one is actually now also available on Amazon. But
that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. And if you have it, and even if you didn't buy it from Amazon, you can still review it on Amazon, which really, really helps. So
I need to do that.
Yes.
Thanks for calling it out. I will do that.
That would be awesome. Thank you.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org, and you'll also find me on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as @PPTWhiz.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. Also through the website, contact the show hosts with episode suggestions, questions, or comments. We want other designers to join us, and you can help. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated, and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.